This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Hello, it's Dan here. Now, there will be another Fun Kids Science Weekly along on Saturday, and I just wanted to let you know about a brilliant new podcast that we've got on Fun Kids. It's called the Fun Kids Book Club, and it's all about amazing children's books. Now, if you enjoy listening to it, make sure you subscribe for free on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the show. This is Bex in the Fun Kids Book Club, and I've got loads of stuff happening. First of all, I'm going to be chatting to authors like Robin Stevens, Jacqueline Wilson, and Max Brooks. Secondly, I'll be telling you all about the five top best books to get your hands on this month. And thirdly, I've got a trivia question for you right now. So I'll ask you this question, and don't worry, you'll get the answer at the very end of the show. Okay, the question is this. What was the original name for Alice in Wonderland? Was it A, Alice's Adventures Underground? Was it B, Alice's Hour in Elfland? Or was it C, Alice Amongst the Fairies? Have a think on it. Right now, it's time to chat to Robin Stevens to find out all about her brand new book, The Guggenheim Mystery.
Hello! It's nice to be back, yeah.
I love seeing you because every time you come in, you just bring me a new book.
Yeah, I know, every 6 months, right?
Brilliant. I'm here. You must be like the hardest working author as well.
I just write really fast, I think, yeah.
How do you write every day?
Only when I'm drafting a book, but I can write a first draft in about 2 or 3 months,
right,
which means that I can do about 2 books a year. Which means I can keep coming in here and seeing you.
Brilliant. Now you've got a new one out, The Guggenheim Mystery.
I do, yes.
I've just finished reading this book. It's brilliant.
Thank you.
And do you want to explain to everyone a bit about the story?
Yeah, so this is a book that is a sequel to a book called The London Eye Mystery by Siobhan Dowd. And if you've read The London Eye Mystery, it's about a boy called Ted Sparks, whose cousin Salim gets on the London Eye one day and he doesn't get off again. He vanishes seemingly midair, and Ted has to work out where he's gone. And I have written the sequel, which sees Ted going to New York with his mother and his sister Kat, going to the Guggenheim Museum, and while he's there, a painting gets stolen very mysteriously. Smoke fills the museum. When the smoke goes away, the painting is gone, and Ted has to find out who did it before his Aunt Gloria is put in prison for the crime she is framed for stealing the painting.
Now, then of course, Kat and Ted and Salim, they go along and they try and solve the mystery.
They do, yeah.
Mystery.
They go running around New York, which was so much fun to write. I put in all my favourite places in New York and I had them go there.
Because I was wondering about this, like, did you have to do a lot of research? Obviously, you know, you're from America. Did you know New York pretty well?
I didn't grow up in New York. I was born in California, so it's a place that I knew. I'd been a couple times, but isn't home for me. So I had to go on holiday to New York. Really difficult.
Oh, life's so hard.
I know. I had to go to the Guggenheim Museum. I had to go, to the zoo and all those wonderful places. A couple places in the book aren't there anymore, like F.A.O. Schwartz, the huge toy store. I went as a kid, so I put in my childhood memory of that massive toy store, and Soren
right.
Ted goes there.
Now, Ted is an interesting character as well.
Yes, he is.
How would you describe him?
So in the book, he says he has a syndrome. His brain works on a different operating system to other people's. And that's how he describes himself. So that's how I describe him in the book. And that's how I sort of talk about him. But he's someone who just really sees the world in a very different way to other people. He sees the world very, like, vividly and carefully. He notices everything that goes on in ways that most people don't, in ways his sister doesn't and his cousin doesn't. And that makes him a really fantastic detective because he just sees everything very, very carefully.
Yeah, he sees the things other people maybe don't notice, yeah. And he kind of takes on facts and stuff,
yeah,
that everyone else is just like, yeah, whatever, I don't really care.
Yeah, this book I get to pull out all my favourite facts and give them to Ted to say, yeah.
What is it like taking on somebody else's characters?
It's quite strange. It's actually a little bit like writing fanfic, which I know is something that some kids do, that I used to do when I was younger. So it felt kind of easy for me in a way, because I knew what it was like to take somebody else's invented characters and sort of write about them and take on their voices. But it was still really difficult to do. I had to read The London Eye Mystery again and again to make sure I got Ted's voice right, because he narrates both books and it has to sound in The Guggenheim Mystery like the same person is narrating this book. So that was really difficult to do.
What was it like being approached to take on the series?
It was a massive honour. It was really exciting. Siobhan's estate, her family, contacted me to see if I would be interested in doing it a couple of years ago, and it was sort of such a shock and a surprise, but so exciting, and I said immediately yes. And then only after it said yes, I started thinking, this might be kind of difficult to do.
Because was it... I read that you just got the title.
Yeah. So I had the first book and then I had the title of the second. So I knew it had to be set in the Guggenheim Museum in New York. I knew New York because at the end of the first book, some of the characters go off to New York. So right. It made sense to me. But apart from that, I had nothing, which actually was quite useful because it meant that I could come up with an idea myself. And then, of course, I gave it to the estate to see what they thought and they approved it. And then I sort of started writing. But the way the painting is stolen, what happens is my idea that came from when I visited the Guggenheim. And I went there while there was a gallery changeover. They're changing the exhibition over. And I stood there and it was really noisy and busy and loud. And I saw how you could steal a painting.
Get stolen then as well.
Yeah. So this is sort of the other half of the plot for me. My mother was the director of education at the Ashmolean Museum in Oxford when I was younger, which is a bit like what happens with Aunt Gloria. She is a curator at the museum at the Guggenheim, and Salim sort of hangs out in the museum, meets all the people who are part of the museum, just like I did when I was younger.
Yeah.
I mean, a very different museum, but sort of the same feeling. And while my mother was working at the Ashmolean, on New Year's Eve of Millennium Eve, 2000, some thieves broke into the Ashmolean Museum, the top of it, mm-hmm. while all of the fireworks were going off, while everyone was partying in the streets, and they dropped a smoke bomb into one of the galleries, so the CCTV cameras couldn't see them, and they stole a Cezanne painting worth £3 million. Mm-hmm. And it has never been found. It's this big unsolved mystery. And I remember just everyone being just so upset, and
yeah.
my mother just being shocked. Of course, luckily she wasn't framed for it. But it was something that was really part of my childhood and something really upsetting that happened. So I wanted to put that in my story as well.
Because there is the fact in the book that very few paintings ever get found again.
Yeah, it's 5%.
Which blows my mind.
It's mad. They all just get stolen. They're like sitting in someone's underground lair somewhere.
It's like, who's looking after these paintings? Who's decided to keep them? And also, surely at some point somebody will be like, I think that's quite rare.
Yeah, I recognise that. It's really sad though, because, I mean, paintings are really valuable, but they're also really beautiful. And they're something that people should be able to see. And that's why it's a wonderful that museums like the Guggenheim, they display them and you can go visit them. And it's just actually a really sad thing as well as a really, you know, bad thing to do. It's quite sort of upsetting as well.
Yeah, it's just, it's selfish. That's what it is.
It's selfish, yeah.
Selfish and
that's what Ted realises in the book, that it's not just a bad thing to do, it's really selfish.
Yeah, I love the journey Ted goes on kind of emotionally as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's him trying to come to terms with what the people are like and why people do things as well.
Yeah.
It's a really, really lovely way of like seeing his kind of like... His follow-up, I guess.
Yeah, he's growing up a bit.
Yeah. Now, because you're a mystery writer,
yes.
I thought I'd just give you a little quick mystery writer quiz,
okay.
If that's okay. I from talking to you before, I know that you you read a lot of mystery books, and you've been inspired by a lot of different places and people. So just a quick true or false quiz, if you're up for it.
I can do it, hopefully.
Okay, true or false. Agatha Christie hated marmalade pudding. I mean, technically not really about mysteries, but about Agatha Christie.
I mean, she was really into puddings. Her favourite drink was milk and cream,
ooh.
Which sounds a bit gross.
Not lactose intolerant.
No, I think true.
Yes. True. Yes, okay. yes. She hated marmalade pudding. One of her pet hates, apparently.
Strange.
Really odd. Number two, P.D. James's initials stand for Paula Dawn.
Actually, I'm not sure. False.
It's false, yeah.
Yes, okay.
They are Phyllis Dorothy.
Phyllis Dorothy,
Took me a long time to think of another name beginning with D. It was...
Yeah, Dawn. I only said no because Dawn seems quite a modern name.
Okay, Holes by Louisa Sharp is about eating a whole piece of pie.
It's not, no.
Yeah, you saw that one straight
I've read Holes.
Sherlock Holmes never actually says in the books, Elementary, My Dear Watson.
I think that's true.
It is true, yeah. He says elementary, but...
He does, yeah.
The bit afterwards. Oh, you're good at this, aren't you? as well as the famous five, Enid Blyton wrote a little-known series called The Terrifying Ten.
False.
Yeah, that's obviously false.
Secret Seven, though.
I just like the alliteration of Terrifying Ten. Finally, Edgar Allan Poe often wrote with a cat on his shoulder.
Oh, I mean, he's quite a weird man. Mm. I would say false. I feel like maybe... Oh, I'm going to say false. Was this the first one that...
It's true.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
He was a really strange human.
He was an odd chap. Yeah. Can you imagine just having a cat just looking down at you?
No.
A bit weird.
Well,
thank you for playing my quiz. You did pretty well, to be fair.
Almost got everything.
Most of them. We should say the book is out right now.
Yes,
Guggenheim Mystery.
Yes.
And everyone should go and read it because it's amazing.
You should go read it, yes. Please, it's available everywhere. It's available online. It's available in bookstores. So it'd be really easy to find it.
And you can't miss it because it looks beautiful.
Really,
it's amazing.
Gorgeous cover by David Dean. I have been so lucky. in my covers. I have two fantastic illustrators to do my covers, so yeah.
So go and check out all of Robin Stephens' books.
Please, thank you.
Thank you so much to Robin Stephens for coming in. Check out The Guggenheim Mystery. I've read it. It's really, 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 really good. Right, Imogen's here. Imogen, what is going on in the world of books?
Well, we're all going back to school, aren't we?
We are.
Sad, sad times, but also really exciting.
So what can we expect in this new year of books? What are we reading?
The first book we're going back to school with is Scarlett Thomas and Dragon's Green.
Yes, I know a little bit about this. It's a kind of like mystical adventure magic book, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's about a girl called Effie Truelove, and she's a pupil at a school for the gifted, troubled and strange. And when her grandfather is brutally attacked, Effie promises to look after all of his magical books. But a shady book collector called Leonard LeVar gets his hands on them. So Effie and her friends have to embark on a mission to the mysterious otherworld to unlock the meaning of an old book called Dragon's Green.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like it. I think it's the beginning of a series as well, isn't it?
It is. It's the beginning of the Worldquake series. I believe there's currently three in the pipeline, but we will wait and see what happens to Effie and her friends.
Wicked. Okay, cool. What's up next?
Next is The Murderer's Ape by Jakob Vigelius.
Yeah, great news there.
I don't know whether that is actually how you say his name. He's a Swedish author, and the book is just gorgeous.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
It's lovely, and it's got my favourite thing in the world in books, maps, and it's got lovely illustrations. I've got it here with me, and it's basically all about Sally Jones, and she's a loyal friend, and she's a gorilla.
What?
Yeah, she's a gorilla, and she lives among the humans, and she can understand everything humans are saying, but she doesn't actually speak.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So her and her best friend, the chief, do business together, and they operate a big boat, and they carry lots of important stuff. And then when the chief is sent to jail after a deal ends badly, Sally the gorilla has to work out how to free the chief and clear the name.
That's really cool.
I know.
I like that a lot. That's really, really good. So what's that called again?
The Murderer's Ape.
The Murderer's Ape. Okay, cool.
Right. Next up in the line of books for going back to school is a classic. It's Roald Dahl, Billy and the Minpins.
It's, you know what, I think one of the few Roald Dahl books I've never read.
I think it is for many people.
Yeah.
And it's not a very long book, but it's lovely, and this is kind of like a remake of Billy and the Minpins, and it's in hardback, and it's in green, and it's still got all of Quentin Blake's lovely illustrations on it, and it's basically about this boy called Billy, whose mum doesn't let him out the garden gate to explore the forest. But one day he goes out there and he meets the Minpins, who are tiny little creatures, tiny people who live inside trees. So it's all like got the classic things of Roald Dahl, of small people living in big worlds, and it's really fun. Like, for one thing, Minpins ride on the back of birds get around.
Great.
And basically the Minpins are being threatened by the hungry beast of the Gruncher. I know. And Billy has to work out a way to save them.
Oh man, I should have read that book. That sounds really good.
Well, now you can.
Now I can. Okay, what's up next?
Next up, we have a gorgeous little book here. The cover looks like it has you on the front, Bex.
Yeah, I'm very happy about this. You know what? Three separate people have sent me a picture of this cover and said, Is this you? It looks like a cartoon version of you.
I think it is you.
Because it's a girl with like a blonde fringe and big brown glasses and bunches, which is what I often wear. So there we go.
Yeah, there you go. It's perfect for you, Bex. It's called A Place Called Perfect, and it's by Helena Duggan. And it's basically about a girl called Violet, and she meets a boy called Boy.
A boy called Boy.
A boy called Boy.
Brilliant.
I know. Oh, it's great. And they live in a town where everyone has to wear glasses to stop them going blind.
Right.
Yeah. But soon it discovers that people are going missing. Her mum's acting strange. Her dad has disappeared. And when she meets Boy, she realises that her dad isn't the only person to have vanished. so they need to work out what's going on with these people.
I imagine the place isn't that perfect after all.
There you go. And again, there's a gorgeous little map in the front so you can follow them around the town and you know exactly who lives where and what's what, and I would definitely recommend it.
Brilliant. Okay, cool. And what is the final book in our list of cool going back to school books?
And the final book is a perfect one for school. It's Demon Headmaster.
Yes, I know this book very well.
It's the new Demon Headmaster book, Total Control by Gillian Cross. And it's about a girl called Lizzie, and everyone at her school has been taking things to extremes. Her classmate Ethan, previously he didn't care about sports, but now he's great at football.
Good for him.
Yeah. Her brother is now an expert in robotics.
Okay.
Of all things. Yeah. He could meet robot.
Should, from the breakfast show, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And Lizzie has just become really good at being naughty, at being bad.
Ooh.
But when she tries to remember all the awful things that she's done, she has a blank space in her mind. So why has it all changed? And has it got something to do with the new headmaster in town?
Yes! Oh, I love the Demon Headmaster series so much. I'm really glad it's back.
It's so good. Such a great one for going back to school.
They are five perfect books. Thank you so much, Imogen.
Not to worry.
Amazing. Now, I'm about to be joined by one of the most well-known children's authors in the UK. It's Jacqueline Wilson. She's got a brand new book called Wave Me Goodbye. Let's have a little chat.
Hi, Bex. Good to be talking to you.
Thank you so much for coming in. Now, this is massive. You've got a new book out.
I'm so excited. It's a different book for me because mostly I write very current modern books. I have written several Victorian books. Mm-hmm. This time, Wave Me Goodbye is set in 1939, which might make some of you, particularly in Year 6 who have learned about this, realise it's about the beginning of the Second World War and about a whole load of children who were evacuated into the country. So had to leave their home, leave their mums and dads, go off with their school friends and their school enemies off to the country, and they didn't even know who they were going to be living with.
Yeah, so in the book you've got Shirley, who is evacuated out there, and it's quite scary for her. It's quite a big deal.
I think it must have been so scary for all those children. I mean, this is real. I mean, I've made the story up, but hundreds of thousands of children from London, from lots of big cities all over the countryside, because people were so scared, and obviously everybody wanted to protect the children. So it was decided by the government that all these vulnerable children would be sent en masse to different places in the country. But people thought about children slightly differently then. The children weren't carefully matched to the people who were going to foster them for months, maybe years. They let the people from the different villages come in, look the kids up and down and say, I'll take those two. Just imagine you're sitting there thinking, pick me, please.
I've read the book and I read that bit and my heart broke because that was the kind of thing that would happen to me in school, at like picking for sports teams.
I know.
I'm always the last one left. Oh, and I read it and I was like, oh my goodness, I know that feeling. It's awful. And there's also in the book, some of the kids hadn't seen cows before.
Well, this is it, because a lot of children, particularly living in the East End of London in the 1930s, didn't have holidays. People were really quite poor then, didn't have any experience of the country. So you go to the countryside and there are these big animals that make funny mooing noises. And my little boy, Archie, in it, is really frightened. And the whole difference in country life to town life was extraordinary. And I've read lots of true life accounts of children who were evacuated. And some kids were desperately homesick and couldn't wait until they actually could go back home again. But other children thought, wow, this is pretty splendid, and, you know, really didn't even want to go home.
Yeah, it was that kind of total polar opposite, wasn't it? Because they've come to this place which is a bit alien, but also amazing, like
fresh
air. And I
mean, you could have adventures.
Yeah.
You had a lot more freedom. So it's just fascinating to know that this happened, so many people experienced it. And I desperately wanted to write about about it.
Is there any other kind of era of time you'd be interested in writing about?
I rather fancy the 1920s.
Oh, nice, yeah.
Because I haven't done that before. I would rather like to read lots of books set in the 1920s. I like the fashions. Mm-hmm. And yet, I don't think I do it all sort of glamour and people doing the Charleston. But I tend to write about the sort of poorer families. Mm-hmm. But all sorts of interesting things happened in the 20s. So maybe that will be the book afterwards.
Oh, I feel like I've got an exclusive. That's exciting. Thank you for that.
Absolutely.
This could be a very difficult question, but do you have a favourite heroine you've written?
Well, I like Shirley very much because she's my new baby.
Yeah.
And she's one of the characters. She doesn't go away. I've written several books about her, and I have a feeling that more will still be coming.
With Shirley, did you feel a bit kind of protective of her? Because obviously you're writing the book and it's your story, but also she's your new character, like you say, new baby, yeah.
She is indeed, and she and I share certain characteristics, and certainly I sympathise tremendously with her because evacuated children were told they could only take one book in their suitcase. And if you're a bookworm, I mean, how mad is that? You finish the book by the time you've done your train journey. And so I sympathised with Shirley, and I understood her pressing need to have 10 books in her suitcase, even though she could hardly drag it along.
This is a weird name. Fire Destruction Biscuit Boo Boo 12. There we go. Says, what is the favourite book that you've written?
There's a book I wrote quite a while ago called The Illustrated Mum.
I love The Illustrated Mum.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I hadn't realised until I was actually writing it, there's going to be quite a sad book, a serious book. And the girl who's meant to be writing it, Dolphin, I really, really felt for her. Yeah. And, you know, I wanted to reach out as if she were real and say, it's all right, I'm going to make it better for you. So I often wonder what happened to her. Maybe I'll write a sequel now.
That's why I love your books, because it's about people working together and helping each other out, even if you've not got the best background, basically.
This is what I like to try and do, and to show that sometimes, you know, you look at somebody and you think, well, I wouldn't want to be friends with you. But I'm trying to get children to look past that perfect image and see that we're all interesting, unique human beings inside. Everybody is sort of devoted to their Instagram accounts. Everybody wants to take selfies. It's all about the way you look. Mm-hmm. And yes, I mean, I care as much as anybody, even though I'm an old lady now, about, you know, does my hair look okay? And do I look all right in this dress or whatever? But actually, there's a lot more important things going on. And I try very gently and hopefully subtly to show this in my books.
Betha Kaboo says, what was the most difficult book to write?
Possibly a book called Lola Rose, because it had not one but two very sad things. It was about a mum who had a serious illness, and that's very sad indeed. It was actually a mother who had cancer who got in touch with me and said, had I ever thought of writing a book about a mum in these circumstances, because she didn't quite know how to explain to her children. And it's a bit treading on eggshells because you want to do it seriously and realistically, but you don't want to frighten children, you want to comfort them. But you can't always 100% of the time say it's all going to end absolutely happily. So that was one thing in the book. And the other thing was about a dad who in many ways loved his family, but he had a horrible temper and could be quite violent at times, and they found they had to leave. And so when you're writing about these sorts of issues, you've got to do it seriously. Mm-hmm. And I did worry about this book because my job is really to entertain children, and therefore I didn't want to depress them or make them have nightmares, but I wanted to show that in these circumstances, you can get through them, you can come through, and hopefully for the two kids in that book, things are okay for them.
The last question we have is from NeonPink77, who rather cunningly asks, any new book ideas coming up soon?
There's Waving Goodbye, and then there is The Hetty One. I used to say, when I have written 100 books, I'll happily keel over. Well, I wrote 100 books and then thought, help, I don't want to keel over yet. So I'm certainly going to go on writing as many books as I possibly can.
That is excellent news indeed. Well, thank you so much for coming and chat to us. Wave Me Goodbye is out now. Jacqueline Wilson, thank you for coming to Fun Kids.
Thanks so much, Bex. Good to talk.
Thank you so much to Jacqueline Wilson for popping by the Fun Kids studio and the Fun Kids book club. Right, another person who's been popping by recently is Max Brooks. Now, he's the author of a brand new book called Minecraft the Island. And not only did he tell us all about it, he also did a special reading of it.
Drowning. I woke up underwater, deep underwater. And this was my first conscious thought. Cold, dark. Where was the surface? I kicked in all directions, trying to find my way up. I twisted and turned, and then I saw it. A light! Dim, pale, and far away. Instinctively, I shot for it, and quickly noticed that the water around me was growing brighter. That had to be the surface. The sun! But how could the sun be... square? I must be seeing things. Maybe some trick of the water. Who cares? How much air do I have left? Just get to it! Swim! My lungs ballooned, little bubbles escaping from my lips, racing me for the distant light. I kicked and clawed the water like a caged animal. Now I could see it, a ceiling of ripples coming closer with each desperate stroke. Closer, but still so far away. My body ached, my lungs burned. Swim, swim! Crack! My body writhed as a sudden jolt of pain shot from toes to eyes. My mouth opened in a choked scream. I reached for the glow, grabbing for breath, for life. I exploded into the cool, clean air. I coughed, I choked, I wheezed. I laughed, breathing. For a moment, I just savored the experience, closing my eyes and letting the sun warm my face. But when I opened my eyes, I couldn't believe them. The sun was square. I blinked hard. The clouds, too? Instead of round, puffy cotton balls, these thin, rectangular objects floated lazily above me. You're still seeing things, I thought. You hit your head when you fell off the boat, and now you're a little dazed. But did I fall off a boat? I couldn't remember. I couldn't remember anything, in fact. How I got here, or even where here was. Help me! I shouted, scanning the horizon for a ship or a plane or even a speck of land. Please, somebody, anybody, help! All I got was silence. All I could see was water and sky. I was alone. Almost.
Big thank you to Max Brooks for telling us all about his brand new book, Minecraft the Island. You can check it out right now. I'm pretty sure it's in every bookshop. Or if you want any more details, head up to funkidslive.com. Now it's time to give you the answer to my book trivia question this week. The question was, what was the original name for Alice in Wonderland? Was it A, Alice's Adventures Underground? Was it B, Alice's Hour in Elfland? Or was it C, Alice Amongst the Fairies? Now, I can tell you the answer is all of them. Yeah, it was a kind of a trick question this week. The answer is Alice's Adventures in Wonderland were at one point called all of those different titles until they eventually settled on the Wonderland one. Well done if you knew the answer. Congratulations. Give yourself a pat on the back. That's pretty much all the time I've got for this podcast. Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed it, remember to subscribe and go and listen to all of the other Fun Kids podcasts as well. Bye. So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB Digital Radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.